Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Blackwood's Podcast, Season 7, Episode 8. My name is Tim Mitchell. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We're also joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
Home with the Kraken. It's going well. So we got some fact check from Dave Price. He was talking about the last episode. We were talking about the farewell to farms. Wasn't it a farewell to farms? He said the main plot reminded him of TSG season 4 episode 2. Sorry, TNG season 4 episode 2, when Picard returned to the vineyard to cope with his PTSD from after being assimilated. And the Klingon's captain's costume in the Lower Decks episode was exactly the same, right? So the scenes of harvesting the worms and the wine and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were fishing for that last week. It rang a bell, but I couldn't place it. That's a good call, Dave.
Mm-hmm. And the cloacan dining utensils are the refined culture, he says here. The birds eat by pecking, which is kind of what I sort of said. And so the cloacans wouldn't shove their beak into a meal like an animal. They would use a proper utensil, thus, you know, the little metal beaks that they were using to peck at the food.
Hmm.
Yeah, we kind of sort of called that, right? So
yeah.
I don't have any other fact checks, so we'll just go on to the headlines with you guys. Take it away, Jonathan.
So, start with some Trek news. We lost another member of the Trek family this week. We had the unfortunate passing of longtime Star Trek actor Tony Todd. So, Tony Todd was well-known for a lot of different things and a lot of different performances. For Star Trek fans, he was Kern, brother of Worf, and in the many episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. He was also the adult version of Jake Sisko in a classic episode of DS9. He played the very old version of Jake Sisko. He was well known throughout a lot of different things. He was Candyman in the Candyman horror movies. He was in The Crow. He was in The Rock. He was in Final Destination. He was all tons of TV shows. He had just an incredible gravelly voice that was so good. He did a ton of voice acting work. He was just just one of those like very omnipresent actors who was kind of in a lot of everything. And very sad to hear that he passed away at the age of 69 last week. So our thoughts are with his friends and family, but what a great legacy to leave behind.
So he played Mog, Worf's brother, you said?
Yeah, he was, he's Kern. He was Kern.
Kern. No, Mog, yeah. Kern, Mog, yeah.
They all have, very perfunctory names. So, you know, I think in the fine tradition, I think we need to do the scream, right? We have to, let Tony go into the...
Yeah, I can't remember what it is. But anyway, Jaime, what were you saying?
Trying to do the Kern voice, like Kern, son of Moog, kind of thing.
Yeah, he just had that great I can't do that gravelly, man. I need to smoke more or something. I just I don't have that gravel in my voice that he did. But again, big life, big character, and I mean, he's very memorable. Even hiding behind all that makeup and prosthetics, he was still a very great performer. So he'd be missed. A couple of things out of the D23 Brazil event that Disney held. So we've got some different bits and pieces here to report. One of the biggest pieces was we got a really fulsome trailer for Captain America Brave New World. We had gotten a bit of a teaser before that was just sort of, you know, click, 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 kind of quick scenes. This one definitely seems to show a little more plot, a little more character. We got our first really good look at the Red Hulk that's going to be in that movie that comes out in February. It looks interesting. It looks a lot more of the Winter Soldier vibe that they have been talking about, which, I mean, that's still my all-time favorite of the Marvel movies, so I'm pretty excited about that. What'd you guys think of this look at Brave New World?
So is that Harrison Ford's character turns into the Red Hulk? Is that what I gathered?
Yeah. Spoilers be damned, there's no way to not look at that and be like, well, that's clearly a CGI red version of Harrison Ford. So if they're going to let the cat out of the bag, I don't feel like I'm ruining anything. But yes, 100%, that's Thunderbolt Ross as the Red Hulk. And that was the character previously played by William Hurt, who, of course, passed away a couple years ago. So they've recast him with Harrison Ford. And it's yet another big name added to the Marvel Cinematic Universe and bringing Harrison Ford on board. He was responding to some of the comments that people had made about the, just the cookie cutter style or the, you know, work inside the system kind of style of working in Marvel. And he's like, we're making really cool mythological movies. Like, what's wrong with that? And I was like, oh, that's a nice perspective from an, 80-year-old gentleman.
I kind of wonder, based on the amount of time it takes to build these things, if there's William Hurt Red Hulk CGI out there somewhere.
I think it would have been funny to have Harrison Ford play the character, but then when he turns into the Red Hulk, make him look like William Hurt. But yeah, Jaime, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good trailer. I tried to kind of skip a little through because I know trailers like this at this length tend to ruin the entire plot. So yeah. I tried to find the beats without stitching together the entire thing. This is the era we live in now. And I liked what I saw because it gave me the more grounded vibes, felt a lot more like Captain America, the Winter Soldier, so I dig it. It looks interesting to me. And the shout out to this one commenter, at Krilazo Kingaroos, 4 days ago says, Ross, you ain't Steve Rogers. Sam, you ain't Bruce Banner, which is probably going to come up quite a bit of their respective counterparts.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. The other thing we got from the event in Brazil was like pretty much a scene from Thunderbolts. They're calling it a sneak peek, but it's essentially like 3 minutes out of the movie. And we got a pretty good look at, sort of what we were expecting, sort of screwball comedy mixed with action, which is, there's really no way around the fact that Thunderbolts is a little bit Suicide Squad-y. It's going to get those comparisons. So we see sort of this group of, adjacent Marvel characters being chased by the Winter Soldier and the ensuing explosions and boomy booms. I don't know that did anything more or less to me wanting to see the movie. I mean, it was interesting and funny and everything I kind of expected from the film. Did it do anything for either of you that changed your perspective on anything?
Not really. No, it looks fun. It looks like a fun movie. I really enjoy Florence Pugh and her banter with her dad and stuff,
Yeah, I mean, that's what it looked like to me.
And we got to see a bit more of Ghost as well, I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and I think...
And Bob or something like that?
Yeah. There's Bob.
I think similar to the other trailer, this feels fairly grounded. It's his superhero meetup, but it's like the knockoff versions, it's the Timu versions of the Avengers. And be like, we can't be called the Thunderbolts kind of thing. That's kind of nice. It's got vibes of, Guardians of the Galaxy, this is very grounded, so it's not like the space pew 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 stuff of Guardians of the Galaxy. It's much more the vibe of this ragtag set of people cluster together, let's do this stuff. And you like, or at least I do, I like the characterizations of like Florence Pugh's character is like, hey, the assignment is, oh, wait, turn it around, building goes boom, okay, assignment is done, right? Like that kind of flippant attitude that she has as that character.
Yeah.
Hang on a sec, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a nice ensemble, kind of thing. It's got a bit, you're right, it's got a bit of an Avengers vibe, but with a lot less seriousness to it. That being said, Bob is a character from the comics and is it's going to be an interesting challenge for those people because Bob is very strong. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah. Yeah. The other bit of MCU news we got was very casually, Mr. Two-time Oscar winner Denzel Washington casually dropped that he's going to be in the next Black Panther movie. So speaking of like A-list stars who have joined the MCU, that's pretty major. They haven't said what part. Apparently, he's been talking with Ryan Coogler, who of course did the first two movies, and has said basically, I'm in. And so Coogler's going to try and create the right part for him. Denzel was basically doing an interview. He said, you know, yeah, I'm getting older. I want to sort of pick my last few projects carefully. Here is what I've got in mind. And he's going to do, he basically listed off five projects that he's got lined up. And he said, when I finish that, I think I'm going to retire from acting and just enjoy my life. And one of those is, yeah, to join the MCU, which is a pretty exciting deal. I do wonder, though, if he's basically saying, like, this is a one and done for him. It's not like he's going to be like, I'm playing this character that's going to be in 20 overlapping films. I get the impression he's going to be like, and I'm done. So, yeah, what do you think? I mean, this is like, that's, I don't know if there's any bigger actor. Like, they have Robert Redford already. Like, is there, there's not much bigger than Denzel Washington. Like, he's top of the heap, right? He's one of the greatest actors of our generation.
Yeah, him and, I can think of a few, but, you know, like Tom, what's his name? Hanks, you know, maybe. Yeah, I mean, you're right.
Like, Meryl Streep and Denzel Washington are about the only two, you know. Harrison Ford is probably the biggest movie star of my lifetime. Maybe Tom Cruise, but you know, and I say that
I was going to say Tom Cruise is going to be available soon, right? So maybe he can be hanging off the side of the starship or something like that as they take off, you know.
Well, there was a rumor that they had approached him about being a variant version of Tony Stark for Iron Man. And I was like, as disgusting as I am, you know, am with his work overall, actually, that's not a bad fit. You know, Tony's supposed to be kind of, you know, little smarmy, little bit cocky. And I'm like, kind of works. Yeah.
But he's got the height for Rocket Raccoon, though.
Denzel, man, that's awesome.
Just a quick one here. This, I just saw this the other day, that Andor season 2, they set the release date of April 22nd, 2025. Mm-hmm. And one of you find them and put the link here.
That would be me.
Variety. Now I'm getting an ad blocker in morning. So anything else came out of this Tony Gilroy writer?
Yeah, they just they sort of talked about a little bit about how the season's going to go. And they showed some visuals. So you can see that, you know, there's a scene with Andor stealing like a prototype TIE fighter and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, like, we weren't already in the bag for Andor season 2. It's probably the single best Star Wars thing of the last 20 years.
Yeah, and it is the rare prequel that we have said on this very show does not fall into typical prequel trappings. I think Better Call Saul is the other one that somehow keeps you engrossed, even though you know the outcome of the character, to the point in, you know, present time that we were thinking of, right? So unless they have fun, like Andor is like, man, sure glad I put all my money into this great estate. I'm just going to do this one last job, and then I'll just retire and be here with kids and family, my dog. You know?
I think it definitely worked that in, for the first season, Andor was the only character, other than the Mon Mothma character, was the only character, I guess, that we knew lived on. So everybody else that was introduced, there was a possibility that they were going to die, and in a lot of cases they did. Season 2, they've already said they're going to bring K2SO, they're going to try and sort of bring things closer in line to Rogue One, so that does diminish things a little bit as far as the prequel problem, because you're like, well, that guy's not going to die, because we saw him die.
Yeah. Well, Alan Tudyk is K2SO, but you mean the actual character, K2SO?
The character, the character is going to be, apparently, we're going to see K2SO in season 2.
Because he did run into a K2 robot or android in the first series, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, he does, but it's K2. it's very much like a, you know, killer robot. It hasn't been programmed by him the way K2SO has in Rogue One.
Yeah. Speaking of Tom Cruise.
Yeah, yeah. If y'all remember Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning. So this is the rename, right? It was Dead Reckoning Part 1 and then Dead Reckoning Part 2. Dead Reckoning didn't do so great. So they said, forget it. Let's not have the stink of failure there. Let's just call it The Final Reckoning because that's less bad, I guess. Maybe Reckoning was contractually agreed upon to be in the name or something. But that's coming May 23rd, 2025. And you don't even have to have seen this trailer, which we will have in the show notes for those of you transporting home. You know Tom Cruise is going to be, you know, running. You know that he's going to be doing some crazy thing that you're like, bro, was that CGI? I don't know if it was CGI. He might have literally done that stunt.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I heard that person I follow on Threads, I've forgotten his name now, but he was like, can we stop Tom Cruise from doing this? Because, you know, he's just going to kill himself when he's already like, you know, 60 something. He should be like, you know, putting his feet up, playing like a Roman general or something like that, you know, whatever, senator. You know, don't they have any other people in the mission, in the impossible IMF force, you know? Like, yeah. Anyway, I mean, I love the franchise. I've been watching IMF since it was on in the 70s, right? So, and it's on Tubi if you want to catch up with the old shows. Tubi or one of those shows.
Forgive me my ignorance, but is this the last one? Are they retiring?
It does say
this
final right on the tin, so...
Like, I mean, but they say that in all those kinds of movies,
well, no,
right?
But I mean, like, so, well, yeah, you just found a plot hole in the whole thing, because every single time, this is the last time he's... falls out with the IMF, he falls out with whoever's running the IMF and the government and has to go against them and all that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, like in the first one, he was like attempted to be killed by his mentor, you know? And it's been kind of the same way all the way through the franchises, you know, Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg are there for comic relief and, you know, stress points and stuff. I think, who's the guy that got run over by his own snow machine?
Well, Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner, yeah. He was in the last couple as well, right? So, and actually, I'm trying to think now, because I know Rebecca Ferguson has been in a few, but there's somebody else, I forget the name of the person that's in the last, that's his current, you know, female companion thing. Mm. Yeah. Might be Rebecca Ferguson, I don't know. Yeah, you know what, it is what it is. I mean, it's kind of like, it's the TV show come to life in large wide format, right? Actually, I think, well, maybe it was Maverick. I was going to say one of the movies was on sale last week, because I guess because of Remembrance Day in Canada and Veterans Day. Is it Veterans Day? Memorial Day in the States, right? Last Monday, if I may. Help me out.
Veterans Day was Monday the 11th, 11-11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think they put a lot of those war movies on sale. I mean, if I can say it now, I think it's been long enough. I could say that that the Maverick movie, what was it called? Top Gun Maverick, was pretty much a new hope with an old hope, including the trench run. Anyway,
yeah.
Not that John will ever see that movie, but you know, there you go.
No, I don't think so. No.
Yeah.
This one needs a little explanation. So folks may or may not know Sam Bankman-Fried, also mm-hmm. known as SBF, formerly the founder and CEO of FTX, the crypto exchange. He has been convicted and sentenced for his role in fraud. And there's a book called by Michael Lewis called Going Infinite, The Rise and Fall of a New Tycoon. As with all these things, and I was just waiting for this because I enjoyed The Dropout about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, that miniseries. I enjoyed the on Hulu. I enjoyed We Crashed about WeWork and Adam Neumann on Apple TV Plus. Here, Apple and A24 are working on a movie based on this book. And apparently, Lena Dunham is set to write the film, and she's the creator of Girls. So... be interesting to see this. It's always kind of fun to sort of, you know, see the dramatization of what happened. Because it is Girls, I'm going to just put out there, like, maybe Adam Driver will play SBF. Just for fun and giggles. But thoughts, gentlemen, would you all watch this? Have you seen the other ones that I mentioned of the people doing bad things?
I'm just adding those to my watch list right now because I haven't watched We Crash yet, even though I worked in a WeWork just recently. And I should watch the Elizabeth Holmes ones too. Yeah, I always like those sort of tech movies or tech shows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I must admit, I followed the SBF stuff in the New York Times as it was all unfolding, and even the Theranos stuff as well. But I don't know. I always find the like dramatic retelling of a real life story, they are not my favorite genre of things. I get a little bit a little lukewarm on those sometimes. Sometimes they've been really good, but sometimes they just end up being like really kind of campy, and they're like, oh, wahaha, I'm twirling my mustache, I'm out to get the poor people's money. Like, it's just, I don't know. I think they can be done well, but sometimes they can be a little clunky.
Did you see the GameStop one?
I did. I did like that one. That was pretty good. But it kind of focused on the character, right? Mm-hmm. The guy who was actually behind the recommendations and stuff. That was, I enjoyed that. That's fair.
But it's the I like the portrayal in the Social Network movie. But then it's also written by your favorite author too, right?
Again, get Aaron Sorkin to write you a script. I mean, come on.
Make anybody look good.
Yeah, David Fincher to direct you and Aaron Sorkin to write your script, you're going to have a good movie. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a role with Jesse Eisenberg playing Mark Zuckerberg that every time I tell my significant other, I'm like, oh, Jesse Eisenberg's in this movie. She's like, who? I'm like, Mark Zuckerberg. She's like, oh, okay, yeah, that guy.
Zombie killer, Mark Zuckerberg, yeah.
You see, if I brought up those movies, if I brought up the... what's the one where they're like magicians?
Oh, Now You See Me?
Now You See Me, thank you. Every time I bring this up, she never knows who I'm talking about. I'm like Zuckerberg, and she knows I'm not actually talking about the real Mark Zuckerberg. She's talking about that actor played the role.
Right? Yeah, right. From that movie. With the
Jesse Eisenberg, yeah. The guy who was going to be Lex Luthor made it exactly one movie.
And that girl from Dragon Tattoo.
Yes.
Carry on, Jaime. What else you got?
Is it mine? Oh, these got moved around. Okay, sorry, I had them in tab order. Apple TV Plus has Mythic Quest. I did not realize they were doing a fourth season because it's been a minute.
What?
I had to look it up.
It's season three.
It's been 2 years since season three. It came out in 2022.
I stopped watching. Yeah, I got to go back and watch that one.
Apple has said that it's going to return on January 29th. Starting with a 2-episode premiere. But then, after the season concludes, they're going to have Side Quest, how many episodes did they say? Four episode.
An iOS app or something, or what?
Side Quest is going to be an anthology series, apparently, where all four episodes will drop at the tail end of Mythic Quest. So, there you go.
Yeah, I think that's been taken.
Back to you, John.
Yeah, we got news today that they have finally nailed down the new Lara Croft for the Amazon TV's Tomb Raider television show. There was hope by some fans that they would name Hayley Atwell, who does the voice of Lara Croft on the new Netflix version of Tomb Raider, but instead Amazon has decided to go with Game of Thrones' Sophie Turner as our new Lara Croft. Statuesque British, obviously well-known name. People know her. She was Sansa on Game of Thrones. I don't have any issue with it. I'm deeply smitten by Hayley Atwell, but I like Sophie Turner too, so I think that's a good cast. And this is the series that's being led by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Of course, Fleabag, she's in the latest Indiana Jones movie. She's very hot writer / producer / star in Hollywood. So yeah, I mean, hopefully it's a fun version. I mean, I can't say, I think we talked about it a few weeks back, but I can't say I love the new cartoon version on Netflix.
I didn't even make it through the first episode, thanks to your review. So
it wasn't great. I mean, your mileage may vary, but I didn't really care for it. It wasn't for me. Maybe it was just aimed at a different demo, but yeah, it wasn't for me. And sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's interesting. Tomb Raider, like, they always try to have a bit of a story at the beginning of the games. You know, they've got obviously the cutscenes and stuff like that, but as you go through the adventure, it's always kind of interesting the kind of things you have to do to get through. I'm trying to think if I just played I just played one of them. I just played through one of them a little while ago. Which ends up being a free world. You can kind of run around and stuff like that. But, like, there's not much. I mean, she's got to find tombs, right? It's like, it's not, you know, it's like it's game fodder. It's not a, not a story fodder. You know, it's like little puzzles and things you have to solve. And I think that's why the first two Lara Croft movies didn't really work well. The one with Alicia Vikander was probably the closest to the games that I've seen so far. So hopefully this one's kind of like that one. I did like that Alicia Vikander version. I might buy the 3D copy when it comes down in price and just watch it on my Vision Pro, you know, but there you go.
Yeah, I was kind of curious. I didn't catch, is this like the, drawing a complete blank here. It will come to me.
It's a TV show on Amazon.
No, I'm trying to make a connection here. I'm like, I'm unclear if this is a completely different iteration of Lara Croft or if this continues from the Alicia Vikander version. Very similar to, you know, Furiosa, the movie, having Anya Taylor-Joy hypothetically continuing on to become Charlize Theron.
Yeah, I don't know. Every sort of telling I've seen of the Tomb Raider story is, you know, her father was a famous, you know, anthropologist or whatever you call those people who go around and discover this stuff and dies, and she never knows how he dies, and she sort of follows in his footsteps with all the money that he's made out of this mansion that she lives in, right? That's sort of the gist of just about every version of the game that I've played. But she's kind of like, like Michael Douglas or Indiana Jones. What's the Michael Douglas franchise that they tried to do with?
Oh, the Romancing the Stone. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That kind of, you know, she kind of like can leap tall buildings in a single bound and, you know, can stop bullets and stuff like that. But, you know, but otherwise she's, you know, lamenting after her father in every single one of these stories. And, you know, and then there's always the guys that have been around forever, like, you know how Indiana Jones always has those characters that show up that he supposedly knows from way back when, and they're, you know, there's a lot of animosity. Mm-hmm. That's that kind of stuff. Like, people who had animosity with her dad, you know, who pass it on to her because she's the spawn of the father, right? So,
yeah.
And there's always some evil, you know, guy who's trying to take over the world, and she's trying to stop him from the... It's very, very much like a Mission Impossible movie, really.
Yeah, somewhere between Mission Impossible and Indiana Jones, but not quite as good as I think either.
Well, but then there's always a mystic element because there's always some sort of deity or whatever that they have to appease, you know, like the... You know, it's like the tombs, like in Indiana Jones, you know, when he gets the monkey god and at the very beginning of the first movie, that kind of stuff everywhere, like, you know, trick floors and you know, poison
and
darts
and backstabbing and all kinds of good stuff.
All right. I mean, it's a genre, right? I guess.
Yeah. The last thing I got this week is my favorite story of the week. I don't know if you guys read this one already, but so the adaptation of the hit Broadway musical Wicked is coming to theaters this weekend. And, you know, there's a lot of anticipation by mostly disaffected theater nerds, but also other people. And
look, Justin really liked that. What are you talking about?
I don't know why that came to mind. So they put out a bunch of toys and merchandising, as you would. It's, you know, set. It's a Wizard of Oz story, so there's lots of stuff. And apparently on the boxes for Mattel's dolls for Wicked, this is a movie that stars Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, on the dolls, instead of linking to their official website, which is wickedmovie.com, they linked simply to wicked.com, wicked.com being the website of pornographic filmmakers Wicked Pictures, who are responsible for such high-quality cinematic content as Black Widow XXX, Captain Marvel XXX, and numerous other adult fare. This is right on the box for kids to go to if they happen to buy their new Glinda Wicked doll from Mattel. Apparently, the advice from Mattel is consumers who have already have the product are advised to discard the product packaging or obscure the link, and then may contact Mattel customer service for further information. And maybe don't leave your kids alone with that one and a phone. But that's an oopsie. I'm thinking somebody got fired because that's not good.
Yeah, well, this is why we used to have proofreading back in the day.
Well, it's
right?
not just, so proof, it's not just proofreading. This,
robots.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is why you hire people like fact checkers, people who actually go to websites, click on all the links, make sure things everything works properly. You can't not do that stuff in today's day and age. So.
So I shouldn't enter wicked.com into my browser right now?
You're an adult.
Incognito window is going to be your friend here. And that's honestly, like, you know, even for the fact checkers, like, if you're double checking the link, make sure you use an incognito window, not just because it might put something nefarious in your browser history, but literally just to see if I'm an outsider, like you would be, right? You're not an insider to the company. If you purchase a Barbie doll, right? You're not logged into Mattel services. You want to make sure that outsiders see the exact same view that you intend them to see. Mm-hmm. And if you log in, if you go into a page that you don't realize automatically logs you in because of your browser being logged in, if you're extra paranoid, you would use a different device that is not connected to your work at all. Ideally,
turn on a VPN as client as well. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you use a cellular network that is definitely
you
not
want the RCMP or the CIA or whoever. Who does the FBI? Yeah, I guess
Homeland
in the States,
Security,
right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's going to matter anymore in a few months, right?
Well, there is a. I don't have it handy, but somebody put an internet meme of, I think it was an image of Kermit the Frog on the phone, and it says, you know, a hacker calling and then him responding. He's like, hacker saying, we have all your passwords. And he says, oh my God, thank you. What are they? Longtime listeners of the show have certainly heard me say, you know, why don't we just have a new revenue stream of, like, if the NSA is, you know, supposedly listening in and all our stuff. I'm like, help me out, dude. Like, you have my term paper. It's not lost. You have it. Please give it to me. I'll pay you $5.99 for it.
All right. Well, guess what? The link will not be in the show notes.
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, you can plug that one in yourselves, folks, if you really want to see it.
All right. Well, that brings us to the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related. And this time it is Lower Decks, Star Trek Lower Decks, Season 5, Episode 5, Starbase 80. That's the worst Starbase in the quadrant.
Starbase 80 with, I think this is called an interrobang with a question mark.
Yeah, but did it have an interrobang in the show?
It did, actually. It didn't when you called it up on the screen, but when the episode came up, it actually had embedded on it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, interesting. Paramount Plus has shown it in both places for me here. So interesting. Question mark, exclamation point at the end of that Starbase 80.
There you go. So, and again, so since I'm the trope meister here, this is the Star Trek trope where the crew gets infected by some sort of thing that turns them into, you know, whether it's Data and Tasha Yar getting it on, or Mr. Sulu running around with the sword and the rapier. Yeah, exactly. There's always an episode where the crew goes nuts, right? And of course, we had the T'Pol reference, right?
Yeah, I had.
That was an Easter egg. Yeah,
I had get your body gel on good and thick and grab yourself a corn dog. It's time for a classic "Something's Wrong with the Space Station and the Crew" episode.
Nice. Yeah.
I had kiddos, when the check engine light turns on, you better check that right away and don't put that off at any time. It's a bad thing will happen.
It's funny, you know, true story. We drive a 2004 Honda CRV, and the check engine light has been on since we got it. And we used to have a regulation here, but of course, you know, one of our conservative provincial premiers got rid of the need to get your clean air check. You know, like they do in California. We used to have to take your car and get like a clean air inspection. And the check engine light was, generally speaking, the thing that goes off on these things. And if you had two things that would trigger check engine light, you couldn't get your license renewed, license plate renewed, right? So it turns out that one of our sensors is deep in the bowels of the engine, and it would cost more than the car is worth to replace it. So my mechanic just sort of says, yeah, your check engine light is on.
Good digression. Yeah, this was hilarious. Like, it was both a little bit dumb, but in all the right ways, I thought. They were touching on so much, again, like, this is what they do when Lower Decks is at its best. They are taking the Star Trek expectations and subverting them in hilarious ways. And this was a perfect example of just how they take something very Trekkie and turn it into something very, very funny. I laughed out loud multiple times during this episode.
Yeah, and the uniform that I don't think it got to her name, but
I wrote it down here. Her name was Cassia Nox,
and she's played by. Anyway, I looked her. Oh, it's on my different app here. Anyway, but I looked her up, and it was interesting. She's wearing the Star Trek Enterprise style uniform, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely one of the goodies because they do have the decontamination gel from Star Trek Enterprise. A shout out to Paul, an Enterprise style jumpsuit.
Yep. What was the I'm doing air quotes Gary or the Stephen Root character? What was he? Was he wearing the same style of uniform?
No, he was wearing a different style of uniform. I think the idea is that basically like whatever uniform you were wearing when you got kicked off of your previous assignment is whatever you're wearing. Like, it doesn't seem like there's a uniformity to the uniforms.
Yeah, this is like the lower decks of the lower decks. Like, you know.
Yeah, and it was funny because obviously they have played with this space station multiple times over the seasons of this show, with it being kind of a looming threat. And then, of course, Mariner actually going there and then to go back there and then have this, you know, sudden, crisis come up while they're there. And of course, Mariner's just like, it's a curse was just, yeah, it was, that was really funny.
No! And she starts screaming, no. And then, what's his name says, are you going to do that all the way, yeah, the whole way there?
Yeah.
I like the fact check though, that they did say that, you know, it would take them what 400 they're years like, to fine. Go it's on fine. Impulse power. Yeah. But to the next,
the next space station at impulse speed would take us 400 years. That's fine. Let's just do that.
Yeah, well, it turns out that just as a fact that the closest planet, the closest star system to where we are now, like the next one over, would take hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of years to get there at the speed at which we travel today.
Well, the oldest man-made object in space is past Pluto and into the outer edge of our solar system.
One of the Voyagers?
No, it was one before Voyager. It's 47 or 48 years that it's been going, and it's 14 billion miles away from Earth now, and it still is within what we call our solar system. So, just to give you some perspective on the size we're dealing with here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the quick check here to see if my nerd brain was working. I was thinking that full impulse is about one quarter the speed of light, and according to Memory Alpha, that's what the Star Trek Voyager technical manual says. Full impulse listed as one quarter the speed of light, or 167 million miles. Wait, that can't be right. 167 million miles. Oh, per hour. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Or 74,770 kilometers per second.
That's fast.
Wait, is that the speed of light? What is this thing? One quarter impulse for Voyager would be 18,000. Speed of light apparently is 74,770 kilometers per second. We can fact check that one. And then one quarter impulse would be, wait, what? This is written so weird. I have to fact check this.
Fact check the fact check.
Just how fast is it, bro? I don't need you to put it in like crazy things. 120. You know what? I'm going to give up on this one. I can't read the weird way.
Tune in next week for the update.
I'm going to pretend that it's like a quarter the speed of light.
Yeah, I was new speed of light in miles per hour. But...
All right. What did you guys have for your best pew pew pews for this one?
Reckless abandon on the Cerritos. Just the whole nutty stuff that was going on as they were running through the halls.
Yeah, I liked Chad, the corndog guy, versus the entire zombie crew. That made me laugh.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I got this. It's time, it's Chad's time to shine.
299 million miles per hour. Miles per second. It's meters per second. Wait a minute, what?
I think it's like 186,000 miles per second.
Yeah, that's the number I remember.
Per second. Per hour is different.
186,000 or 186,000?
It's something like 186,000 miles per second. That's
the
number.
The 186 is what I remember. That and E equals MC squared.
Those are good ones to remember. Right.
Yeah. And F, force equals mass times acceleration. That's a good one, too. And foil, first inside, outside, last, right? First outside, inside, last. Foil. I can't remember what we used foil for.
It's there. It's still in there.
Oh well.
Square it's still of in the there. It's in news.
My brain.
Oy vey.
All right. At least yeah. Wikipedia has this written pretty obviously. So the speed of light in a vacuum, if you prefer meters per second, it is 299 million or so meters per second. Or 300,000-ish kilometers per second. If you prefer miles per second, it is 186,000 miles per second, or roughly 671 million miles per hour. So take a quarter of that, and that's a full impulse, I believe.
Okay, so back to the pew-pew. Easter eggs.
What did you find for Easter eggs?
I mean, there's because the whole shtick that this Starbase has been just kind of limping along, they have the... The turbo lift has handles instead of talking to the computer,
and the captain Freeman knows how to use it,
right?
I'm not that old.
There's a shop that sells uniforms of like dead crew, and there's a TOS vintage, uniform vintage with like a uniform. Bullet hole or phaser hole in it.
Yeah,
vintage, right? Yeah, and the wall communicators from and actually
right.
One point I think they touch one of them and it makes the noise from the original series, right?
Yep. They also mentioned a couple of different races. They mentioned that Nox is an Alorian. Of course, we know that's from Guinan's race, and of course, the same race was the bad guy from Star Trek Generations. They mentioned the Tarchanan parasite that the Doctor has. That's from the TNG episode where Geordi had been infected, and all the crew that had gone down on this mission had been infected with this parasite and all turned into these like blue glowing characters. But it's really funny because like in that one, they all sort of transform into these very like alien looking creatures where he's got like the Doctor and this one has like half and half. That was pretty funny. They also mentioned the Akamarians. Akamarians are the race from a TNG episode, I want to say season one or season two. That's the one where the woman falls for Riker, but she was actually there to kill the guy. And anyway, they are an established race in Star Trek canon, so that was good.
Well, it's like Jaime always sort of says when they have like a low budget, no budget for costumes, they just
put muddy
makeup on their faces and make them like poor Irish, you know, migrants or something like that, you know, with like Irish sweaters and stuff, or you know, like hippie looking people, right?
Best quotes. This one was a killer. Jaime, would you have your best quotes?
I had the Cetacean Ops. Crew right towards the beginning is like the navigation processor is putting out random coordinates and it keeps shocking the water.
Mine was that's the worst starbase in the quadrant. And I'm total T'Pol here.
That's right. Check me out. I'm a total T'Pol over here. I had the line from the beginning of the episode where Mariner says, doing granular science is what Starfleet is all about. And wow, I sound like a real Boimler right now. but the other one I like the forget caution, new plan, reckless abandon. That I might actually get a tattoo of that one. And I really like the line when Mariner's walking onto the station for the first time. She says, last time I was here, I fell into a ditch. Now I know what you're thinking. You're like, how can there be an open ditch on a starbase? Well, anything's possible in hell.
Yeah. So why did she end up back at, was it part of the show she went to Starbase 80 or before?
It was a couple seasons ago. She basically got onto her mother's bad side so bad that she got sent there. Yes.
Sent away?
Yeah.
Okay. But we didn't get to see Starbase 80 until this episode, right?
No, I seem to recall we were actually there with her. It wasn't quite as catastrophic as we saw it today, but I think we actually did get to go there a couple seasons back.
It did have a real Halloween vibe. I wonder if they were planning on, well, I guess it's a couple of weeks after.
Yeah, definitely. It had that sort of like, you know, things are going wrong. The parts, we didn't really talk about it, but the Freeman parts where she's like, I'm determined this isn't going to happen to me again. My counterpart in the alternate universe was stuck here and I'm not going to let it happen to me. And she's like chasing bats with Ransom through the basement. Like that was really funny.
Yeah. And not getting affected by the comm badge. Virus, which
well, because they didn't need it, right? They were just doing their thing,
right?
Yeah.
Well, they're still doing their thing, as far as we know.
Yeah, really,
because nobody told them it was over.
The question I had for this one was just: we're down to four episodes left, which is both gutting and too soon. But considering that they had established last week that there is this sort of overarching somebody's creating the portals stuff, this was a great episode. It made me laugh. It's everything I want in a Lower Decks episode, but time is kind of winding down. It was a little bit strange that there was nothing there.
Yeah, there was a scene where there's one, I think when they went to engineering, the door opens and you see this character, but maybe that was supposed to be one of the zombies.
Yeah, anyway, there's no overt references that maybe there was like some...
Oh, we missed Odo's bucket.
Right. A bucket.
Or a bucket. A Starfleet bucket.
Yeah.
Speaking of anomalies that they capture, right?
Yep.
That's another trope, too, is that sort of sentient anomaly that's a child and trying to prove to its parents that it's a good anomaly or talented anomaly.
Anaphasic entity, yes. I love also when they when the doctor just, you know, knocks the whale out with a pool net and then says, "How did you do it?" He's like, "Complicated doctor stuff."
Yes, yeah, that was a good quote too. Yeah,
yeah, that was good. This is what I come to Lower Decks for is Star Trek based silliness, and it is a great one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was a nice tonic after this week's Penguin episode.
Now a word from our sponsor.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now back to the show.
Oh, yes. Well, you did call part of the ending here.
I hate being right sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of like, so the Penguin we're talking about in season one, episode eight, A Great or Little Thing, which is, we want to say the season finale, but I think I pointed out to you guys that I saw on HBO, they were advertising it as the series finale,
as in there will be no more,
which is interesting. Yeah, as in there will be no more, but which is interesting because I mean, you know, in any case, I mean, the one thing we're sort of talking about is the demise of Vic, and it was kind of a needless thing to do at the end.
I don't know. I mean, I think.
He was his right-hand man. Well, yeah, I guess if he's ascending to becoming the Penguin with the suits and the top hat.
But even more than that, I think the whole idea is that this journey that he's been on, like part of why Sophia doesn't win is because of, you know, like she can't let go of some of her stuff. And part of what we see Oz go through is just the agony of letting his mom down, knowing that she's, you know, she is his weakness, that nothing is really kind of working the way that, you know, that he wanted it to play out. And I think he realizes that, like, Vic is what's left. Vic is the last of his weakness. If he gets rid of Vic, then he won't have any weaknesses left, right? I think he genuinely cares about Vic by the end of this. And I think he genuinely knows that he could be used to hurt him the way that his mom was used to hurt him. And he doesn't want to go through that again. And his decision is, I'm just going to take Vic out so that nobody can hurt me using Vic. And it's a gut-busting decision. Like, it's heartbreaking that he can be so cold about it, especially after everything they've gone through. And obviously the performances of both of them in that moment were gut-wrenching. But
well, I think we learned in the last couple of episodes, he's pretty pathological, right?
He is. And I think you're right. That's definitely come to the fore, that he is a genuine psychopath. And, you know, I think that...
Yeah, because he had no remorse over killing his brothers.
No, and I think killing Vic in the end is the putting a bow on the box on that is just basically like, yep, like, this is who I am. Nobody can hurt me now. I'm this. And, you know...
Oh, by the way, spoilers for anybody listening.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed this series. I had my elevator pitch as all hail the Emperor Penguin because it sort of works out for him. And at the very end, he's got the tux and everything much more penguin-esque like. And so I feel these were written sort of you know, as I'm going through the episode. And so initially one of my early pew-pew-pews is what I titled Victory, where Vic helps, you know, get the gangs on Oz's side. And then that leads into my big question later on, which is, you know, was Vic the last weakness for Oz to shed himself of?
Yeah, my elevator pitch for this one was some fates are infinitely worse than death. And that ties to Oz, and it ties to his mom, and it ties to Sophia, and it ties, like, there's so many people that applies to, right? Like, where Sophia ends up is infinitely worse for her than death. She's back in Arkham. His mom is now, you know, theoretically, they say she's in a vegetative state, but if she's crying, then clearly she's got some mental faculties, she just can't express them. So she's in hell because she's now has to basically be a prisoner to watch what her monstrous son continues to do. And, you know, and Oz sacrifices everything to gain power, I guess?
Or credibility.
Yeah, I mean, right. that's his power play in this one, right? Obviously making the deal and trying to get into high society and, you know, all that. But yeah, that was, man, that was some dark stuff in this episode. The stuff with, you know, torturing him and his mom, and then, you know, obviously the way it played out. And yeah, there's like a lot of backstabbing and killing in this one. For pew pew pew, I liked the montage of all of the lieutenants killing all the bosses. I thought that just because through the whole thing, Oz kept saying, like, these people just keep us down. They step on us. They, you know, they treat us like crap. And to see all of the lieutenants just be like, yeah, that's enough of that. And just one by one, take out all the bosses, and they get their just desserts for both not listening to their lieutenants and also for stabbing Oz in the back. I thought was pretty poignant and well shot. Did you guys have anything else?
Yeah, I like. Well, I had the pew 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 with the convincing Sophia that he was going to kill her, only to have it be the police coming. Which to is, arrest
yeah,
her,
for right? her, so. Fate worse than death, right? I'm going to go back to that place.
Yeah, that was neat. And my non-traditional pew 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 was the Sophia with her black outfit with this shock of red highlights, the red scarf that looks like a hangman's noose. It was really a very striking outfit.
No, you're right. Yeah, her whole, like, the wardrobe for Sophia, the evolution up and down from the beginning to the end is fascinating. The hair and the makeup and the clothing, like, her aesthetic was really interesting. The only Easter egg that I really caught was at one point they talk about going to the airport, which is Goodwin International. It's named, I'm guessing, after Archie Goodwin, who was a longtime comic book editor, very famously in the 1960s, 70s, 80s. Good quotes, lots and lots of good quotes. Just because somebody knows something doesn't mean that you don't need to hear it from the person who hurt them, from Sophia. from Francis to her beloved son, Oz, you're the devil, you're the goddamn devil. Not what you want to hear from your mom. And Oz saying, I'll remove the expletives from this one, but I did it. I took it all from those blanks. Like you said, I'm the blanking king. Yeah, like that declaration of like, this is what I fought for. This is it, right?
Yeah. And I had a very similar one. He's like, you and your kind, you're so busy filling your own plate that you don't see that everyone around you is starving.
That's a great one. Yeah. This was a terrifically written series, like just full with, I mean, I think the three of us struggled with it because there was so much swearing.
Yeah. The one Easter egg that we missed was that the bat signal at the end.
Yeah.
I kind of put one in here is Selena Kyle as the half sister. You know, that's a good shout out to Carmine or perhaps Carmi Falcone. I'm not the first one to think. Wait, is that the bear?
Carmi.
And an audio one or musical one is, so the Batman movie uses a lot of Nirvana. This one uses Where Did You Sleep Last Night from Nirvana's Unplugged in New York, which I thought is a pretty good choice.
Yeah, but it was a cover too, right?
A cover version. It was not Kurt Cobain.
It's a cover version of a cover version. Like, song. It's not...
Right, but I think that was the linkage there, though, that it was meant to... And it was sung in the... I'm not familiar with the original, but it's sung in the style that Nirvana did in the Unplugged in New York version.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep, agreed.
Well, actually, but the difference is, though, they were singing the actual original lyrics because Kurt Cobain changes the lyric. Because it's actually black girl, where did you sleep last night?
Oh, instead of my girl?
Yeah.
My girl, where did you sleep last night? Gotcha, gotcha.
Did they say my girl in the...
They said my girl.
Yeah. That, Kurt Cobain did that. He rewrote it that way, or sang it that way.
Yeah. So my only big question, I guess, coming out of this and sort of looking back at the whole series is they created a pretty amazing character in Sophia, and all credit to Kristen Milioti, as well as to the writers and the, you know, the director showrunners. But Sophia has become a pretty amazing character, and I'm glad that her end for this series was not death, although maybe she wishes it was the character. The fact that they do make a point of highlighting the reminder that, you know, we did find out in the Batman movie that Selina is her sister, half-sister, and it does beg the idea of, you know, could we see Sophia in some other form in the future? I did see a comment from Colin Farrell this week who said that he has been told that he's going to be in the next two Batman movies, and... So we will see more of the Penguin again. Whether or not he's a central character obviously remains to be determined, although you'd hope after all this that, you know, people have become more engaged with him. I mean, we spent more time with Oz than we have with the Batman or any of the other characters, right? So, yeah, what do you think? Do we see Sophia again?
Possibly, because they did make it clear that her skeevy... doctor, therapist, Julian, sort of boyfriend dude is like, it wasn't clear to me if he had left Arkham, and it's like, no, he's still working at Arkham. Everything he was doing was just, you know, on vacation time or something.
Yeah. I don't know. Could be good. I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about it a few episodes back. I have been a Kristen Milioti fan all along, and will absolutely watch more of her in different things, but this is the first time I've really felt like she defined a role. You know, I've seen her in lots of stuff and thought, oh, she's really good, but this is the first time where I'm like, I want to see more of her being this character.
Yeah, the very end with Oz's girlfriend role playing as Oz's mother is very creepy. It's so creepy. It definitely fits with everything that we sort of knew that was sort of peppered along the way, so it kind of made sense when I saw it, but it was still kind of a weird thing to have at the end. It shows you the depths of problems that this Oedipal complex that Oz has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty icky, especially given that his actual mom is in the next room.
Right.
Adding extra ickiness on top of your ickiness.
Good show. I mean, overall, like, you know.
Yeah, I would love, I mean, I didn't know what to expect from this. I didn't know how it was going to play out, given that there seemed to be a little bit of a disconnect between HBO and what HBO does and what HBO Max did sort of at arm's length, but that now has been sort of amalgamated. I wasn't sure if this was going to be an HBO show or if this was going to be a sort of HBO Max, you know, we do things separately kind of show. And it definitely felt like an HBO show. It felt very sort of dark Sopranos. It had that sort of, you know, Emmy bait kind of feel to it. The performances, the writing, the directing. I would love it if they would explore other characters. I mean, give me a Zoe Kravitz Catwoman 8-episode series. Give me a Joker series. Give me, you know, something that is set in this same universe that ties it all together. I think that would be amazing. Although, again, it's just the shame of it is like, yeah, how about give me an 8-episode Batman series? Like, I don't know. That's what I want most of all.
Can we move on?
Yeah. Right,
let's go to the watch list.
Honey,
you're up first.
Yeah, I have this compilation from Kristen Milioti's Abby the Writer role on 30 Rock. She is a new writer that comes on to the 30 Rock show and is bubbly blonde bimbo. Like, her little first words here are like, oh, look at all these dudes. I knew I smelled sausage. It's insane, like, how different that role is from this role as Sophia. And shout out to who's this commenter? Isaac Trefez 9744 3 years ago, who said, "Kids, did I ever tell you about the time your mother started a new life to run away from me?" Oh my gosh, that's so great. It's a great five-ish minutes to see what that's all about, and the spectrum and the contrast from her role as Sofia Falcone in this very series.
Yeah. Yeah, do yourself a favor, even beyond that, go watch the episode. I'm sure it's streaming somewhere on one of your services, but, mm-hmm. 30 Rock is a great show to begin with, but that episode is particularly funny because she is a foil to the, very staunchly feminist character that played by Tina Fey, and it's very, very, very funny. I went to the comic book store today. I know you're going to find that shocking. It's unprecedented that I have gone, but
Which comic book store did you go to? I mean, of all the thousands of them that are out there,
I went to my local.
And you still have a box there? My buddy.
I still do. Okay. It has changed hands. There's been a new owner the last couple of years. But my friend Rob is still the head of comics there, and he kindly puts my books away for me.
Yeah,
for
can you explain to the uninitiated what it means to have a box at a comic book store?
So essentially, you can have your local comic store, in a lot of circumstances, will put aside copies of certain books for you to make sure you, if you can't come in on a weekly basis to pick up books, because they do come out every single Wednesday, you can basically have them put aside for you. And then when you go in, you can just gather them all up. I am not exactly perfect attendance wise as far as going and picking them up, but I'm always good for them. So they can thankfully have always put my books aside for me and held on to them. But I went in today because there was a couple of things that I was interested in reading and talking about. The Star Wars comic book universe, which has been since Marvel relaunched it quite a while back, 10 years ago now, has been in canon. So this is stuff that is considered in canon. This is what happened. This is not like some alternate universe or whatever. So when Marvel took over the Star Wars franchise, the first set of stories they told was 75 issues long, and they told the story of what happened with everybody between Star Wars and Empire. And it was like, cool, it filled in some blanks, it introduced where some characters got to meet each other, it, tied into all kinds of interesting stuff. It was really well done. Then they basically ended that series with 75, and then they rebooted not just the Star Wars comic, but the Darth Vader comic, the Dr. Aphra, which is a character that comic fans know. They rebooted all that and then set the next run of series with a new bunch of number ones, and that was set between Empire and Return of the Jedi. So no Han Solo, and sort of how did all these characters get to where they're going? And again, all in canon, so it's really interesting to sort of see what they've decided are going to be the canon stories between Star Wars and Empire and between Empire and Return. That series just ended with issue 50, as did the Darth Vader series, as did Dr. Aphra, the Bounty Hunter series, all these other spinoffs that they did. So that brought us to a really interesting time period with this new series that they've launched called Star Wars: The Battle of Jakku. So they are now moving into the post-Return of the Jedi canonized stories for the first time. Now, we know some of what happened in that time period because we've had books like Aftermath, and those ones are in canon as well, these novels. But in the comic universe, we haven't really gotten here too much. And we never really got the actual details of sort of what happened right after Endor, how this all sort of played out with our main heroes. And long story short, they are now doing this 12-issue series. It's starting with Star Wars: The Battle of Jakku, a 4-issue series called Insurgency Rising. The 4th issue just came out this week, so it's coming out weekly. And then they're leading into another 4-issue series and then another 4-issue series to sort of tell this sort of overarching chunk of what happened at the Battle of Jakku, what happened with the Empire's remnants after Vader and the Death Star and the Emperor blew up. How did we kind of get to this, junk field of wrecked Star Destroyers and X-Wings and AT-ATs on Jakku. So this is kind of a cool thing for Trek fans, for Star Wars fans across the board, because now we're actually getting some like real kind of history and canonized history in comic books. There's been tons of stories written over the years in novels, comic books, all kinds of media about what happened after. I remember very excitedly when I was a kid, when Return of the Jedi came out, the original Star Wars Marvel series continued, and it continued and it told the story of what happened next. And I was fascinated because for everyone else that I knew, they were like, oh, they lived happily ever after. It was over. Like, congratulations, you blew up the Death Star, Darth Vader's dead, we moved on with our lives. I wanted to know what happened next. And so I was fascinated with that and really enjoyed that. Once the Marvel Comics property went away, then Dark Horse got the license. Dark Horse did the same thing. They did a story on what happened next. So there's been lots and lots of stories. But to have these ones be told to you that this is what happened, this is canon, this is what we all agree happens, is cool. And I enjoyed the first four parts. It's a little bit overstuffed. They're trying to cover off, like, they're introducing some new characters, they're trying to introduce some new sort of places in the universe, that you get all the regulars are in there, as, you know, Luke and Leia and Han and everybody. Lando shows up at one point, and yeah, it's really cool that we're finally in that. I recommend the first four parts. I'm sure there's going to be a collected edition of all these parts probably within the next few months, or you can go on the Marvel app and you can download the comics. But it's a good read, and it's really interesting to get into this part of the Star Wars universe that we really haven't gotten a look at yet. So that's my very long review of Star Wars The Battle of Jakku, Insurgency Rising. The first four parts are available now. It's coming out weekly, so the first part of the second arc of this is coming out starting next week, and it'll wrap up before the end of the year. And we're sort of into this really interesting area of Star Wars comics where, yeah, they're kind of really breaking some new ground. So the other two things I'll just quickly hit, we also got two new number ones this week. There's a new Star Trek Lower Decks number one. They did a mini series previously. This is from IDW Publishing. They did a 6-issue mini series, which was enjoyable. I really liked it. They've just started with a new number one. I think it's ongoing, although I can't seem to find the information anywhere. I read the first issue. It made me laugh, just like the show does. It's silly and fun. If you like Lower Decks, I gotta admit, it gave me a little bit of comfort, thinking like, well, maybe they'll keep doing this, and at least I'll have this in my life, as opposed to having the show once the show is gone. Mm. But yeah, it looks the same. It's got the same sense of humor. The animation style is captured really well in comics. So if you're a fan and you want to sort of keep the adventures going of the Cerritos, this is still on the table. So enjoy that.
Is this the first time that Lower Decks has been a comic in this sense?
Well, no, they did that limited series. So they did a 6-issue series. I think it was 2 years ago. It was enjoyable. I really liked it, but it was just a short-lived kind of thing. The idea that they might do this as an ongoing is pretty fun.
In the article you posted, they've got like the crew on the first cover, and then they've got the, I don't know what that character is, a little happy, tough character, and then they've got Badgie, right? Are those like the next yes. threes?
There is a Badgie cover where he's sitting.
Oh, these are all the same number one. These are all number one.
Yeah, they're different covers to different number ones. Oh. Yeah, it's the same book inside, it's just different covers. But yeah, they actually have a pinup gallery in the back of the first issue that shows you all the different covers. So there is the one of Badgie sitting there with he's got was it Moopsie? He's got Moopsie on his lap and he's petting him like a James Bond villain. Like, mm-hmm. it's pretty funny. But it's what you'd expect from Lower Decks in a comic book form. So if you dig that and you're looking for something to continue the fun, so
how would somebody subscribe to such a thing like this rather than going to a comic book shop? Like you can get this as a Kindle or whatever, right?
Absolutely, yeah. You can go on to, if you want, you can go on to Comixology, which is Amazon. So if you go to Amazon and put
in, I thought there was a problem with Comixology or something.
Oh, it's terrible. But the good thing is that you can watch or you can read that stuff on a lot of different devices, which is a good thing.
But like, if you wanted to like subscribe to it and get it the issues as they come out kind of thing.
Yep, you can basically just do that. You set it up as a subscription, and do it that way. The other thing that dropped this week was the new rebooting of G.I. Joe number one. There have changed companies that are publishing G.I. Joe comics. They've started doing this crossover universe between G.I. Joe and Transformers, that they all sort of exist in this same Hasbro universe. And the first issue of G.I. Joe sort of starts back at the beginning. It's a relaunch, you know, familiar characters. They're mobilizing. Cobra's rising, all the stuff you like from the show. But they definitely show you a different side of what you're going to get on this new G.I. Joe series because, spoiler alert, one of the main characters gets shot full of holes in the first episode. So this is not going to be like TV, pew, pew, pew. Mm-hmm. Oh, you missed me, G.I. Joe. This is going to be something else. If you are a G.I. Joe fan, it's an interesting look. I'm probably going to hang around for a few issues anyways and see sort of where it goes. But if you're into the nostalgia factor of it, G.I. Joe number one hit the stands this week, and you might have to hurry because I think they're selling out pretty fast.
Oh, what do you got? Oh, it's me now.
It's you.
It's me. Yeah. So I was lamenting the other day or last couple of weeks ago that I've been keeping track of what movies are available in 3D format for the Vision Pro. The Wild Robot was a movie that was at TIFF and is now in the theaters, and it's coming out. It's already out, available. I'm waiting for the price to come down a bit. But so there's a handful of movies, because it's an odd sort of thing. Like, and I was sort of saying on More Than Just Code last episode that I was surprised that Wolverine and Deadpool didn't come out in 3D, since we saw it in 3D in the theater, right? And most of the Marvel Disney Plus stuff they've been putting out in 3D for the Vision Pro. So it is odd that this wasn't showing up. And the reason why I started the list, I'll put a link in the show notes again for the list, is because between Apple, the Apple TV app or whatever we call these, iTunes or whatever it's called these days, and Disney Plus, you really can't tell what is available for Vision Pro without actually going and hunting for it, which is, again, so we're out well over 200 movies are now available on Vision Pro for 3D. And this week, Wolverine and Deadpool came out on Disney Plus, as you know, and it is in fact available in 3D on the Vision Pro. So I've been watching. I started watching it a couple of days ago in Vision Pro, and it's glorious 3D and widescreen format. So I'm really enjoying that, and that's on my watch list for today. I've got a link here to the iTunes store, as well as the link to the article which I talked about. And then I've added the Elizabeth Holmes movie and We Crashed, which are two things I got to watch that I haven't watched yet that Tommy recommended earlier. And that's it for me. Any questions about Vision, about watching Deadpool with the glorious 3D blood and stuff like that?
No, I got to experience it before, so.
Yeah, no, I mean it's a different experience when you watch it on Vision Pro because you don't have to, you're not juggling with those, well, you are juggling with stupid glasses, but it's like a much better visual experience than going to a movie theater and watching it. So cool. And I guess that's it for another week. So hey, Jonathan, people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
Yeah, you can look for me on Instagram as @JPKNews, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime, where would people find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevWithAHair.
All right. My name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra, on Mastodon, on Threads, and on Blue Sky. And I am going to do a PSA now. And that is that I am currently purging all of my tweets off of the Twitter machine, because tomorrow, as we record, November 15th, Twitter is changing their terms, and all of your tweets are going to be fed into a giant AI machine, thanks to Mr. Musk. So, yeah, I've closed down all of my social networking accounts except for one, which I have need to keep so I can do customer complaints to bad service. But other than that, I'm getting rid of my profile on Twitter.
It's a good plan.
It's a good plan. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.
Bye.
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 Bye. You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. This is Jean-Luc Picard.
Shut up, Wesley.
Sorry, say again. Just the tag. Gotcha. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Chore it is to try and get rid of your tweets too.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter. You can't just deactivate your account. You have to actually purge everything first.
You can deactivate your account, and apparently after 30 days they will somehow disappear. But I somehow don't. For some reason, I can't seem to trust the people that run Twitter these days.
Come on.
I know.
You're talking about the co-head of the Department of what was it, Jaime?
Defense or something. He's going to fix
government
up
government efficiency.
Oh, we got to. Yeah. We got to go off recording now. Is it that time of the show?
Oh, Canada.
Things aren't as bad as down there.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
they're pretty bad, but still not as bad as down there.
Yes, because we have to pay attention to our drunk uncle and his cohorts. Anyway, yeah. All right. Till next time. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Hang on. We've got to stop recording now. How do we do that? Where's the exit button? Computer, arch.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.